As we told you it would, yesterday the White House announced a quadrupling of the tariffs on Chinese-made vehicles. These little $12,000 cheap EV jobs that are actually, according to analysts, are quite well built, and they are trouncing the competition where they've been made available in Europe. American forces want to make sure, both Republican and Democrats, that that doesn't happen here. President Biden taking the lead on that and putting a 100% tariff on it. But what will that do also to American automakers that produce some brands in China? Alyssa Slotkin, U.S. Congresswoman for the Michigan 7th District, joining us live this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Right now, I mean, I think there's maybe one Polestar vehicle and maybe one Volvo vehicle that are being brought in from China. Buick has the Envision and I think Ford the Nautilus. But this onslaught of the BYD Geely vehicles hasn't happened. Yeah. Because we had that 25% Trump tariff on there, why do we need to quadruple it if it's already working?
Yeah, I mean, basically, we need to look at it because they are making major inroads in places like Mexico. They've got 25% market share right now in Europe, only starting there in 2021. I mean, they're making moves, and in particular are interested in building factories in Mexico, using, you know, NAFTA or the USMCA to come into the United States. They've already got autonomous vehicles that are testing in California. So there's just, it's just around the corner. And just like we have to be aware of the fact that, you know, in Michigan, we miss the coming of the Japanese little vehicles, the Korean little vehicles, that these are another country's vehicles that are doing bonker sales in places like Europe, India, most of Asia, and now Mexico, where they have 30% market share. So it's coming. And this was just to make the point that we're not going to be undersold in our own country with vehicles.
What if they're built in Mexico?
Great question. So that's the place where tariffs are not, you know, always the most perfect tool, and why I think there actually needs to be a national security review of these vehicles, right? I mean, obviously, we're all from Michigan, so we don't want these cars coming in $10,000 being completely subsidized by the Chinese government and underselling our own vehicles. We don't want that as an economic thing. But I also don't want their video cameras, their LIDAR, their recording, all that data that comes with a fleet of vehicles driving around the United States, our military bases, our infrastructure sites, and sending that data back to China. The truth is, if a car comes from China, is built in China, or a part, or aluminum in this case, is built in China or made in China, then it can be, these tariffs apply, but it doesn't apply smartly, as you're asking, about stuff that are a Chinese facility but located in Mexico. So we're not done, and that's the part that I'm watching very closely from a national security perspective.
Congresswoman, as a representative from a state that's deeply invested in renewable energy, how do we balance the benefits of protecting the domestic industries with the potential consequences of increased trade tensions with China?
Yeah, I mean, I think the truth is, like, leadership, you know, you always have to make these decisions between these countervailing opinions. You know, there's lots of people who want to, you know, do everything we can for the environment. We all support the environment, but we also aren't going to let China continue to just completely subsidize their industries and undersell everybody and put American workers out of business. So I think it's just a balance, and you have to make decisions when you're in any leadership role. And the decision was made here that we have to put a line in the sand on China. And I think that's been a very bipartisan feeling, right? This is Democrats and Republicans, I think, have been pretty clear on this. And I think that's a way to know that there's consensus.
We've talked to some economists that have said that look, it's just philosophically why these tariffs may be well-intentioned. They tend not to have the effect that you hope they would. It doesn't lead to an increase in employment in the protected industries, that the companies just raise prices, they pocket the profits, or they give share buybacks to their investors or higher dividends. So, and in this case, they actually could exacerbate the inflation that we're dealing with. What say you?
You know, I think that, you know, President Trump put tariffs on, now President Biden's putting tariffs on. You know, in an ideal world, you know, in a people who believe in free trade, we wouldn't have to do that. But honest to God, the way that the Chinese have been cheating for years and years and years, basically stealing our intellectual property. I had someone tell me at the ceremony yesterday, that used to watch people come to the Detroit Auto Show. And, you know, some people, everyone comes and they look at all the new cars and ooh and ah, and they would see people getting under the hood, taking pictures, going underneath the chassis of the vehicle, and literally with their cell phone cameras, people are taking our intellectual property basically reverse engineering it, figuring it out, mm-hmm. and that's on chips, that's on solar, that's on, and then subsidizing through the Chinese government these industries so that they dominate and they take over in an area. So tariffs are not perfect. Democrats use them, Republicans use them. But at a certain point, you have to push back. They've been cheating for 15 years on these things, and no one's called them on it.
I was just going to ask you, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but how did President Biden get to this point when in 2009 he was slamming President Trump for these tariffs, and especially while campaigning in 2020? How did he sort of get to this point?
You know, that would be a question better for him, but I think the folks that I have seen in his administration had said, you know, that they're watching this happen with chips. I mean, Lord, we know what happened when we couldn't get our hands on those 14-cent microchips in Michigan, you know, and on again, off again, auto plants opening and closing. We went through COVID where we didn't make a single mask, glove, or gown that we needed, especially those N95s. We just have gone through a lot on supply chains. I think a lot of people had their kind of come to Jesus on supply chains during COVID. And all I can tell you is that, you know, the president made the point of saying he's trying to make this a surgical set of tariffs, not sort of a widespread, wide swath set of
targeted
tariffs. But you'll have to targeted. You'll have to ask him, though, how he came to it.
Yeah, we should point out that President Trump is proposing a 10% tariff on all imported goods and a 60% mm-hmm. tariff on all Chinese goods. Will this hurt, for instance, the Buick Envision and the Nautilus that's produced in China? Will this hurt American automakers before it hurts BYD or Geely?
So I think we're waiting now. I mean, you know, we're in the middle of this because it just happened. And the Chinese have put out a lot of, you know, strong words about retaliation and what they're going to do.
Right.
And we have to wait and see. I think the goal that the administration had was to not have it hurt us the way it would hurt them, and also set an example for the rest of the world who are watching these vehicles flood their own areas. To be honest, we are in the middle of it, and it's a little too early to understand what the actual implications are. I certainly noticed that some of the car companies had a sort of wait-and-see public response mm-hmm. yesterday, and I think that probably makes sense. Look, our supply chains are completely intertwined over, you know, 30, 40 years of globalization. No one
doubts
that.
And they're trying
to
decouple. It takes time.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. And it's not easy, right? No one said it's easy.
Right.
But I think, again, that COVID moment of realizing we just have completely outsourced some critical supply chains abroad to China, I think is really the mark in the sand that changed people's perspective on this.
That, drug components, semiconductors, and you've pointed out all of these things to us, and I'm happy you're on guard with that. Alyssa Slotkin, we appreciate you. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Care. By the way, yesterday when he announced this, President Biden once again said that that inflation was 9% when he took office.
I heard that. I paid attention to that. Yes.
For fact check, it was 2.1%. Mm-hmm. It wasn't 9% until 17 months into his tenure. Time for this week's S&P Global Mobility Minute with Tom Libby. It's brought to you by Dana. Dana, people finding a better way.
While recent headlines have focused on the softening in electric vehicle deliveries, registrations for hybrid vehicles are increasing, reaching a market share of nearly 11% in the first quarter of 2024, up 8% from a year ago, according to S&P Global Mobility Analysis. There are many factors contributing to this growth, including the availability of new hybrids in a wide array of vehicle categories, and importantly, their reasonable prices relative to electric vehicles. The leveling off of EV deliveries is related in part to Tesla's performance. The Model 3, Tesla's number two model in volume, is in the midst of a changeover to a new version, limiting its current availability. Although Tesla still has four other models on the market besides the Model 3, most of these are at the upper end of the price range, limiting the brand's current portfolio in the mainstream space to just the Model Y. It is noteworthy that aside from Tesla, many other brands, including Ford, Hyundai, BMW, Kia, and Mercedes-Benz, saw robust increases in EV deliveries in the first quarter when compared to a year ago. I'm Tom Libby with this week's Automotive Minute from S&P Global Mobility, formerly IHS Markit.